Good morning. It's good to be here this morning. It's great that we get to celebrate Mother's Day. The slide or the video that Pat just had for us is very fitting. Mothers do a tremendous amount, and I think it's fitting that we give them a day to acknowledge just what they go through. Because kids, those of you who are in here, you may take your mother for granted. You may just assume that certain things automatically get done and you don't know what goes on behind the scenes and how much effort your mother puts in. With that being said, this morning, I want to take a slightly different direction than talking specifically or only to mothers. We talked about this in Valentine's Day when we talked about love and a message about love. And I said that churches sometimes exclude people on certain days. So this morning, I don't want to exclude anyone. So we're going to be talking about women as a whole. So not just mothers, but women as a whole. And you're going to see that because we're going to be looking in the book of Esther. And if you know anything about the book of Esther, it doesn't talk anything about Esther being a mother or about what Esther did with her children. But there's going to be some things that we look at there that we're going to bring back. So if you have your Bibles, we're going Old Testament. We're going to Esther. We're going to open in Esther 7, because we want to kind of pick up the story of where Esther was before we go back and we add context. So Esther 7, verses 1 to 10 is where we're going to be looking this morning. And we're going to be talking about kind of what's going on. I want to give you a little bit of back context before we quite read what's happening in Esther 7. Because it's going to be important to what we do. It's going to be important to what we look at. It's going to be important to how we address the topic. In Esther, the nation of Israel is not necessarily all together. Okay, there's been captivity. They've been in and out. They've been going through a process. So the Jews have kind of been scattered. They're not their own nation. And they are under the rule of another king. So they're not their own nation established by themselves at the moment. So Esther 7, if you look at verses 1 to 10, we're going to read it, and it says this. I'm going to read it off the screen because I got really tiny print this morning. It says, "So the king and Haman entered to feast and drink with Queen Esther. The king repeated to Esther what he had said on the previous day while drinking wine. 'For what are you asking, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you. Now what is your request? Even if it is half the kingdom, it will be done.'" Verse 3 says, "Queen Esther replied, 'If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and it pleases the king, at my petition, let my life be given me and my people at my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, to be annihilated. If only we had been sold as male and female slaves, I could have kept quiet, for that distress would not be sufficient to trouble the king.'" Verse 5, it says, "The king Ahasuerus," you may know him as King Xerxes, that's typically how he's referred, King Xerxes, but his name is King Ahasuerus, "answered and demanded of Queen Esther, 'Who is he and where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do so?' Esther said, 'This wicked Haman is the adversary and the enemy.' Then Haman was seized with terror before the king and the queen." Verse 7, "The king arose from the banquet of wine in his wrath and went into the palace garden. But Haman remained and pleaded for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that harm was determined against him by the king. Now the king returned from the palace garden back to the hall of the banquet as Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. The king said, 'Will he also violate the queen while I'm in the room?' As the shout erupted from the king's mouth, they covered the face of Haman. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs of the king's presence, said, 'The gallows, 50 cubits high, which Haman had constructed for Mordecai, who had spoken good on behalf of the king, stands at the house of Haman.' Then the king said, 'Hang him on it.' So they hanged Haman on the gallows that had been prepared for Mordecai, and the king's wrath was pacified." This is a wonderful Mother's Day story to open with, isn't it? There's nothing better on Mother's Day than to talk about someone hanging from a gallows, right? On the surface, it seems very strange that we would talk about such a story. But I want to give you a little bit of context as to what's going on. Chapter 1 of Esther, if you take it all the way back to the beginning, we're not going to read through the whole book of Esther. I would encourage you, on your own leisure, go home and do it. It's not that long. There's only a couple more chapters after chapter 7. And each one is pretty short. Go read the whole book. It's a great story. But in chapter 1, King Xerxes, or King Ahasuerus, has Queen Vashti, was his queen at the time. And King Xerxes is throwing this major party for the 127 provinces he has, and he's got all kinds of princes and people from all over the place coming. And they're eating and drinking at this seven-day feast. His queen is entertaining all the women, because the king has all the men, the queen has all the women, they're both having their own feasts. The king gets this bright idea, hey, I got all my guy friends here, I'm gonna show off my queen. So he calls for Queen Vashti to be brought to him, and she refuses. When you read through chapter 1, we're not told specifically what King Xerxes' plans were. It said that he wanted to display her beauty to all of the guys that were there. We're not given any other description what his intentions were beyond that. So don't read into that, okay? But it says that he wanted to show off his wife, his queen, to the people. And she refused. Whether she knew what was going to happen or she didn't want to be a part of it, she refused. So the king gets mad and says, what should we do? We can't let this stand, because if all the provinces hear that my queen has refused the king's order and she doesn't come forward, and now the provinces hear about that, all of the women in all of the 127 provinces are going to get this bright idea that when their husbands say something, or when the princes or when the kings say something, that they can just say, nah, I don't want to. So being the bright gentlemen that they were, having been drinking for 7 days, they say, we're throwing Queen Vashti out. She's lost her queenhood. We're going to find someone new. So go get all the young virgins of the land, bring them here, and then the king is going to get to select his own new queen, essentially. So chapter 2 and chapter 3, that's essentially what happens. In chapter 2, verse 9, it says, because the young lady appeared pleasing to him and had gained favor in his sight, it's not on the screen, he quickly gave her ointments and cosmetics, her allotted food, and 7 young chosen women from the king's palace. He also transferred her and her young women to the best place of the harem. This is talking about Queen Esther, or to be Queen Esther, all right? Esther was chosen as one of these young girls that would go before the king to be potentially selected for the new queen because of her beauty. And we're told that she was so beautiful in chapter 2 that she was handpicked by the head guy of this whole ordeal to go to the best place in the palace, to be in the special harem, because she was top notch. All right? They then spent a year in preparation, 6 months with one particular ointment and 6 months in another. Women, when you put on makeup, I'm going to get in trouble. My wife's looking at me. Men, it doesn't take us long to get ready, does it? Socks, shoes, run a comb through the hair, maybe a little bit of water, and we're good to go. Brush your teeth, wash your face, you're out of here. The women traditionally are blow-drying their hair, maybe straightening their hair, putting on the makeup, putting on mascara, foundation. You have foundation, and then you have makeup that goes on top of the foundation, and then you have like concealer and cover-up, and then all the other stuff. I only know this because my wife's like, oh, I'm running out of such and such. What is that used for? Like, I have no idea. I have soap. I'm out of shaving cream. I need shaving cream. That's the extent of what it takes us to get ready. They spent, men, have an appreciation for this. If your wife spends an hour getting ready, let her have it. These girls spent a year preparing to go before the queen. They spent 6 months applying one particular ointment, and then 6 months applying another before they even had the opportunity to go stand before the king to see if they would get selected. So men, next time your wife's taking a little long in the bathroom, be careful she doesn't respond, I could be Esther. I could take a year to get ready. Because sometimes we like to say, it's taking you like a year to get ready. Come on. They did. Chapter 3 of Esther, things get a little interesting, okay? We meet a man named Haman that we read about here in chapter 7. Chapter 3 is where we get introduced to Haman. And he cooks up this plot to destroy all the Jews. Esther is in selection. Esther has a cousin named Mordecai. All right? Esther was an orphan being raised by Mordecai. Both her parents had died. So she's being raised by her cousin. And Mordecai tells Esther when she gets selected, don't tell anybody that you're a Jew. Don't let them know. Don't tell them your identity. Don't tell them what you are. Keep it quiet. So Esther's kept it quiet. Haman hated Mordecai. If you go back and you read chapters 2 and 3, you will see the amount of hatred that Haman has for this one man. The king put Haman in this place of authority, essentially second to the king. He had the king's ring. He could write decrees. He could sign them, you know, in the king's ring. For all you kids, they used to write stuff, put a seal, wax, put a ring on it. You may not know anything about it. You just send a text message and it's good. But there was a process and there was power in the ring, and Haman had that power. And Haman hated Mordecai, so he said, I'm going to cook up a plot that's going to get rid of Mordecai. I'm going to kill all the Jews, and it'll get rid of this one guy. But he presented it to the king in such a way that he said, look, these people have different laws. They do different things. They're not like us. They're not like us. They don't abide by the same laws or traditions that we do. They could be a problem for us. I think we should get rid of them. So the king says, all right, Haman, go ahead. Let it be done. So Haman goes and he sets this decree out to all the land that all the Jews should be eradicated to avoid any uprising. The king didn't know what he had just done, though. See, at this point, Esther has been selected as the new queen. Esther went before the king after the year, and the king immediately picked her as queen because of her beauty. Esther's now queen, and she's a Jew. And the king just allowed Haman to send out a decree that all the Jews would be killed to avoid what was going to happen, potentially, that the Jews would have an uprising. And in chapter 4, everything starts moving. And this is now where we meet Esther. So what I want you to do with me is I want you now to turn to Esther chapter 4. If you're in Esther chapter 7, just go backwards a little bit to Esther chapter 4. What we're going to see in Esther chapter 4 is where Esther starts coming into the picture. She was in the picture in the beginning as being selected to be the new queen. But in Esther chapter 4, she now starts to take a more prominent role in this story. And we're going to look at verses 5 to 16. Esther has received a report from her cousin Mordecai, who's in mourning outside of the city gates, because Mordecai just found out about what Haman had done, that the decree was going to go out that all the Jews would be killed. Esther, at this point, she's been queen for about 5 years. We're told that when all this process started, that King Xerxes was in his 7th year of reign. And by his 8th year is when he had selected a new queen. And it says, towards the end of the 12th year, the beginning of the 13th year of his reign, is when Haman sent the decree out to kill all the Jews. So Esther's been queen for about 5 years now at this point. Mordecai hears what's happening, is in mourning. Esther finds out. And in verse 5, it picks up. It says, So Esther summoned Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, appointed to attend her, and commanded him concerning Mordecai to learn what was about and why. So Hathach went out to where Mordecai was in the area of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and about the sum of silver that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa concerning their destruction so he could show Esther, tell her about it, and then charge her to go to the king in order to gain him favor with the king and to make requests in the presence of the king for her people. Hathach returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Verse 10, again, Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply to Mordecai, all the king's servants and all the people of the king's province know that whoever, whether man or woman, wishes to come to the king at the inner court but has not been summoned, there is one law to put him to death, unless for some reason the king should hold out the golden scepter so that he may live. I, however, have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. Verse 12. So all the words of Esther were told to Mordecai. Then Mordecai told him to reply to Esther, do not think that the king's palace you will be more likely to escape than all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, protection and deliverance for the Jews will be ordained from some other place, but you and your father's house shall be destroyed. And who knows if you may have attained royal position for such a time as this? Verse 15, then Esther replied, sending back to Mordecai, go gather all the Jews who can be found in Susa. Then fast for me. Stop eating and drinking for 3 days, night or day. I and my young women will fast likewise. Only then would I dare to go to the king, since it is not allowed by law. And if I perish, I perish. Esther's been put in a position, right? She's queen for about 5 years. Not much has really happened. What we're going to see is Esther's faith. There's a lot that goes on moving from chapter 4, 5, and 6 to where we picked it up in chapter 7, all right? Esther's in anguish because she finds out that there's a plot to kill all of her people. And there's not much that she can do about it. Mordecai tells her that she needs to go before the king to let him know what's going to happen and how it's going to affect his queen and her people. But there's a problem, and we saw it in verse 11. So if you look back at verse 11 again, verse 11 is where we see the issue. Unless the king summons you, you can't just go walking into his inner court. Some people say, I have an open door policy. Your boss may say he has an open door policy or she has an open door policy. What does that mean? That means at any given moment, if you have an issue, you can what? Go knock on the door. Hey, boss, I need to talk. Can we sit down for a minute? Yeah, sure, come on in. Let's talk. And you can talk, right? Open door policy didn't exist with the kings in the inner court. If you walked into the inner court and you hadn't been either summoned or he didn't want to see you, so he didn't extend his golden scepter, that was it. That was game over. Hope you enjoyed life, because you're done. That was the policy. And Esther says to her cousin Mordecai, Mordecai, I can't go in there. Even the queen couldn't just enter into the inner court without having been summoned. And Mordecai says, do you really think that being in the king's palace, you're going to escape what's coming? Do you really think that you're going to get out of it, or you're going to dodge the bullet, that you're not going to fall to the rest of us? And then he says, maybe you've been put in this position for such a time as this. Maybe God's plans way back when was for you to be brought up in this moment, in this spot, to take a stance, to help save your people, to help save the nation of Israel. You have an opportunity to take a stance, to trust God, to follow him, and to stand up for his people. Verse 16, we find her answer. She sends word back to Mordecai to fast for 3 days for her, and she would do the same with her young women. I find it interesting that she says fast for 3 days, night and day. Traditionally, when they would do fasting, they would fast throughout the day, and they would still be able to eat after sundown. But she's saying for 3 days, don't eat, don't drink, nothing. I go 3 hours, and I'm hungry. I don't think I would last 3 days. If I was Mordecai and Esther had come to me and said, look, here's the deal. You fast for 3 days, night and day, and we'll make this happen. I think I'd come back to the table and be like, all right, let's renegotiate the terms. How about you fast for 3 days and night, and I'll fast for one? But that's not what Mordecai says, right? Mordecai says, let's do it. You do it with your people, I'll do it with my people. And we're going to take a stance, and we're going to see where God takes us. The way that she ends verse 16, I think, is amazing. She ends it by saying what? Those last four words there. She says, and if I perish, I perish. So be it. But I'm not gonna go down without at least trying. All right? Once you move past chapter 4, chapter 5 starts off telling us that at the end of the 3 days, Esther puts on her royal garments. She gets all prepped, and she goes before the inner court. I remember as a kid watching this story on VHS, not this DVD stuff. But I remember watching it. I don't know if it was here at church or it was at my house or maybe at school, but watching it, and they try to make it all dramatic, right? So Queen Esther, she walks into the inner court, and like she's standing there, and everyone freezes. Like the court jester, the balls just drop, a plate of food falls over, you can hear a pin drop, and everyone's watching to see what's going to happen. As the king sits there, and he's got the golden scepter, and everyone's anticipating, is he going to reach it out? Or is it going to stay there? What's going to happen? And they try to make it all tense. If you read through chapter 5, it says that Queen Esther positioned herself in such a way that the king could see her through the court, and he raises his scepter. There's no drama there, all right? But when you're like 8 years old and you're watching it on video, you're like, oh no, what's going to happen? She's crazy. But Xerxes extends the golden scepter, and she goes before him, and she says, if I've found favor in your sight, let me make a request. And he says to her, Queen Esther, even if it's up to half the kingdom, make your request. It shall be done. And she says, come to a banquet with me. I'm going to prepare a banquet. You and Haman, remember Haman? We haven't forgotten about him. You and Haman, come to the banquet that I'll prepare. And the king says, fantastic, let's do it. But the amount of faith that it took for Esther to take that stance, the amount of love that it exhibits for her people, it's very similar in the way that mothers care for their children, right? Esther didn't have to take a stand. She didn't have to step up and try to do anything. No one knew she was a Jew except Mordecai. Her identity was concealed. She was sitting pretty as the queen. And if these other people perished, so be it. But she loved her people. She loved Mordecai so much that she was willing to, in verse 16 that we read, perish so that they might be saved. Isn't that similar to a mother's love? That moms, you would care so much for your children that you just want to see what's best for them. That you want to see them succeed. That you would want to see them go on to do bigger and better things than what you've done. Or at least on the same scale as you. Because you love for them so much. The video we watched says that a mother cares for them through broken hearts, through good times, through sickness, through bad times. That a mother loves them and is willing to do whatever she needs to do to care for their children. If you're not a mother in here, it doesn't matter. It doesn't get you out of it. Esther wasn't a mother at this moment. But she's willing to act in the same type of love that a mother would exhibit to her children for her nation, for her people, for her brothers and sisters. What we're going to see next is Esther's reward. And this is the second thing I want to look at this morning before we tie this all in for Mother's Day. Esther's reward. The king agrees to go to this banquet because what guy in this room would not agree to go to a banquet? You're telling me you're going to invite me to a buffet. All right, we got one honest person that says not so much. If you invited me to a buffet, you got my attention. You're going to set up a buffet, I'll be there. Ask whatever you want. Just keep the food coming. I love buffets. Buffets lose money when I show up. It's true. Ask my parents. Especially if they have crab legs. Forget it. It's game over. So it's a very smart tactic. Esther goes, I know. The way to a guy's heart is through his stomach. I'm going to invite him over for a banquet. She has him over for a banquet, right? And the king's sitting there. Haman's sitting there. They're having a great time. And the king says, all right, Esther, what do you want? What's your request? And she says, if it pleases the king, come back tomorrow. And we'll do this all over again. And so King Xerxes says, all right. Buffet number two. We're going to do this all over again. But it's at the second banquet that Esther finally speaks up and takes her stand, right? She had the faith, first of all, to even go to the inner court, to risk her life, to grant a presence with the king. Then she has a meeting with him, requests a second meeting, and at this second meeting is where she asks for what she wanted. And that's where we picked it up this morning in chapter 7, right? When we looked at chapter 7 this morning, we read in the opening verses that Esther asks that her life be spared, her life and the lives of her people be spared. And the king says, who in the world would bring harm against my queen? And that's when she drops the bomb that she's a Jew. And that he signed a decree that all Jews should be killed. That their houses should be plundered, all their stuff should be taken. It was free reign for anybody. Again, she finds favor in the king's eyes. And he says, we have to fix this. Right? The king agrees to try to change it. Haman is taken, hung on the gallows. Now, the gallows that Haman had built, interestingly enough, if you go back and read it, was made for Mordecai. Because Haman hated Mordecai, which is where this all started. He hated Mordecai to the point that he built a specific gallows to hang Mordecai on it, because Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him at the city gates. He refused. I'm not going to bow to any man. I bow before my God. And that's it. He took a stance. Haman and his family were disposed of, but that doesn't take care of the problem. Look at Esther chapter 8. Esther chapter 8, we're going to look at verses 11 to 13. Haman's taken care of. Haman's kind of thrown out the window. He's gone at this point. But the decree still stands. The issue is that the king signed the decree. His ring is on it, which means it can't be undone. There's nothing that can be done to rescind what's been put out there. So Esther once again goes before the king. He extends the golden scepter. And you're looking at verses 11 to 13. It says this. She asks that we need to put a new decree out there that would allow the Jews to protect themselves. Verse 11, it says, what the king granted to the Jews in each and every city was the right to assemble and to defend their lives by annihilating, slaying, and destroying any army of any people or any province that would assault them, the little children and women included, and to plunder their possessions. Verse 12, this would happen on one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. A copy of the edict being issued as law in each and every province was published to all the people so that the Jews could be ready for this day to avenge themselves on their enemies. The reward for Esther, there's multiple. But she, because she took the stand, essentially saves the Jewish people at that time. God could have found another way to do it. If Esther hadn't stepped forward, he would have found another way, right? That's what God does. He wants to use people to do certain things. But if you're not going to do it, God's going to find somebody else to do it. Because his will is going to be done regardless. One of the rewards that Esther gets to be a part of is that the Jewish people get to defend themselves and they're saved. And it says that the Jewish people, later on, if you read through chapters 8 and chapter 9, they saved themselves. And that all the armies that came against them were destroyed and put down. So that none of what Haman had decreed would take place. But there's another thing that she gets rewarded for. She's rewarded for taking a stance. That acting in faith, by doing what she believed was right, regardless of the situation, she gets to be a part of God's work. All right? She gets to be a part of what's done to save the nation of Israel. She gets to be a part of what God's ministry was doing. So as you look at all this, you look at Esther, where she came from pretty much nowhere, becomes queen, and then is faced with one of the biggest decisions of her life. Do I take a stand? Do I risk life and limb? Or do I just let it go by? Or do I just say, forget it, you guys are on your own. Defend yourself. I'm happy where I'm at. How does this relate to mothers? How does this relate to Mother's Day? Not a lot of happiness in the beginning portion, but the end result is a happy result. But there's some traits that are displayed by Esther that all women can relate to. The first one is the stance. First of all, Esther knew what she believed. Mothers, women, aunts, sisters, whatever you are in this room, the first thing that Esther did was she knew what she believed. Is your faith your own faith? If you're a child, is your faith your own or is it your parents'? Is your faith your own? Esther then was an example. Based on her faith, she acted out in a certain way. Women, are you acting on a certain way because of your faith? Are you living your life out that would show what you believe? Because people are watching, and people could be influenced based on what you believe, based on how you act. She trusted God to protect her, Esther, in the position she was in. She sought out his will through prayer and fasting, and then she was willing to risk her own life so that the lives of her people could be saved. This demonstrated a tremendous love. This demonstrated what we would today would say would be a mother's love. That no matter what, she would seek to protect her people as a mother seeks to protect her own. Have you ever seen, like the nature show? And you see a bear, right? They do a documentary about bears. And you got the mama bear, and then you got the cubs off somewhere, right? And if you're nearby a cub, man, get out of the way. Because when that mother sees that her cub is potentially in danger, that mother is going to come charging into the situation and just wreck house to protect her baby cub. And if you're there, you're part of what's going to be damaged. You ever seen them rip open a car like it's a tuna can? Bears don't play around. You leave food in there, they're not going to mess around. They'll rip your car right open for that grocery bag. But a mother bear will act in such a way to protect her baby cub. She'll do whatever it takes to make sure that that cub's okay. You as mothers maybe won't do quite as much damage as a mother bear. Maybe you would. There's some tempers here. Yeah, you don't know. My mom might do, well, we won't talk about that. But mothers, you want to protect your children, right? Aunts, you want to protect your nieces and nephews. Sisters, you want to protect your brothers or sisters. There's an instinct in you that wants to protect them. Esther wanted to protect her people. So she was going to do whatever it took to protect them. Regardless of if you're a mother or not, God can use you in any situation for his purpose and his glory if you allow him. And you can still have an influence in someone's life, even without being a mother. All of us had a mother at some point, right? Whether we had a good relationship with our mother or whether we had a bad relationship with our mother. We all had a mother. That's how we're here. That's how science works. No matter what they change, that's how it works. You all had an influence in your life at some point, good or bad. You all had a motherly influence. Andy Stanley said something interesting once to women. He said, your greatest contribution to the kingdom of God may not be something you do, but maybe someone you raise. Think about that. The greatest contribution you could ever make to the kingdom of God may not actually be something that you do. It may be someone that you raise. Because based on how they live their life, what they go on to do, what they're able to accomplish in the kingdom of heaven, you directly impacted. Because you helped raise that person to who they became. That's not just for mothers. And that's not just for women. That's for everybody in here. Whether you're a mother, whether you're a father, whether you're an aunt, whether you're an uncle, whether you're a brother, whether you're a sister, you have influences in people's lives. There are people that look up to you, younger people, maybe older people, because of what you've done. And it might turn out that the greatest accomplishment you ever make for the kingdom of God could be the influence that you have in that person's life, in how they turn out, what they go on to do. So if you're here this morning and you say, I'm not a mother, this day is not about me, it doesn't matter. It does. Look at Mordecai and Esther. Mordecai wasn't Esther's mother. But Mordecai had such an influence in her life that she went on to save the Jewish people in that moment, in that time, because of the influence he had. If you're a mother here, you have an extra set of responsibilities because you actually have children you have to take care of. All right? That's your responsibility. If you're not a mother and you think you're off scot-free, you're not. All right? You have a potential to influence other people's lives in what you do and what you say and how you act. So for all the women here, regardless of marital status, regardless of children status, you have the potential to be a mother to someone. Whether they're your own kids or not, you have the potential to have an influence in their life in a positive direction, because we all need a mother's love. We all need a motherly instinct. Guys, quite frankly, we're just not as good as it, good at it, at showing love sometimes. Sometimes we are, but traditionally, as guys in society, we're a little harder, right? We're a little more brash. We're a little more closed-doored. Ah, we're men. We're tough. Get over it. Scraped your knee. Wipe the blood off. Keep going. Let's go. Your mother's running out there. Oh, my goodness, you're bleeding. Unless you break a pot in Mexico, then your mother screams, oh, my goodness, you broke the pot. Thanks, Mom. Don't worry about the blood dripping down my leg. It's okay. I mean, the pot can be replaced, but that's just whatever. But I know deep down that she cares. So regardless of if you're a mother or not, your takeaway for today, you have an influence in someone else's life. And it could be that your greatest contribution to the kingdom of God is that influence in somebody else's life. So don't think that just because you're not a mother, that it doesn't matter, because it does. Because there are those of us who do great and wonderful things, and then there are a lot more of us that are behind the scenes helping create those people, helping build those people, helping influence those people into the ways that they can act like Esther did. Maybe you're going to be an Esther someday, but maybe you're Mordecai instead, acting in that role to build Esther. Think about it. So this Mother's Day, when you leave later on today, mothers, we appreciate you. We're glad for what you've done. For those of you who are involved in your kids' lives, it's an amazing thing. It's something that every child needs, is a mother's love. And to go without it, I just can't imagine, personally. But if you're not a mother, think about the influence that you can still have on someone else's life. Think about how you can be a part of their lives and maybe fill a gap that they don't have, especially if they don't have a mother. Let's close in prayer. Father, we thank you for this morning. Lord, I thank you that we get to celebrate Mother's Day. I thank you for the mothers that are here. I thank you for the mothers who aren't here, for the influences that they had in our lives, whether it be grandmothers, stepmothers, aunts, whatever it is, Lord. I thank you for the influences and the roles that they've played in each and every one of our lives here. Lord, I pray that this morning would just be a time of getting to celebrating those influences, celebrating those that you've put in our lives. Lord, ultimately, I pray that as we leave here this morning, that it wouldn't just be mothers that are thinking about the influences they have in their children's lives, but all of us. That, Lord, all of us in some way, shape, or form can play a part of someone else's life. We can fill a hole that they need. We can help set them in the positive direction. We can be an influence for them to help affect your kingdom. So, Lord, I pray this morning that it would just be a great time celebrating and remembering our mothers and what they've done in our lives and what they continue to do. Lord, as we come to the table, I pray that we remember what you've done for us. Lord, the sacrifice that you made, the example that you set with your son on the cross, that he would be willing to come and die for us, to pay that price, to show us the ultimate love so that we can once again be reunited with you. Lord, I pray that you would bless the remainder of the time we have together. And we pray these things in your son's name.